Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. And now, as fate would have it, we were scheduled to talk to Alderman Matt O'Shea from the Fighting 19th, as I like to call it, down in Beverly and Mount Greenwood. Because every year, Alderman, you put on a fundraiser at St. John Fisher School for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And along with us from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, we've got Frank Gross, and we also have Bridget Shuda, who are the two folks who basically run the day-to-day operations of the foundation. Mm-hmm. And we were all going to come here and talk sort of happily about this pancake breakfast, which is so well attended every year.
It is.
And so much fun. And such, you know, it's a great family opportunity for people to come out and you know, pay respect to the Chicago police who go out and do this very tough job. And little did we know, as we were all about 30 hours ago sitting in a room talking about this, you know, and fundraising efforts for this year, that we would be in the face of such tragedy just, you know, an hour later. And I want to thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. But let's start, if I can, with Frank, because Frank, you were a police commander as
yes.
well, and with decades on the job, and you knew Paul.
Paul was a good friend. Paul was a Paul was one of the go-to guys, and Paul never said no to anyone. I talked to his 18th district. We just came from the 18th district. They're having multiple roll calls, and there's people coming out of the woodwork to offer support for the officers who do this on a regular basis. And it's been since 2011 since we lost one of our own, and that was Clifton Lewis, and that was very hard. But it's we've been blessed for many, many years, and now we had a deal with Paul's his murder. So, but Paul was a good guy, and. And I said he never talked about the people that worked under him. I said he worked side by side with them because that's what kind of guy he was. He yeah. worked with his troops, and it shows. He assisted the tech team and won yesterday, and he met evil, and we lost Paul, and he is so going to be missed by everyone.
You know, one of the things that that I think is striking in all the tributes about him is his commitment, and it's sort of a stark irony here. People will remember when a couple of years ago we had the horses on Michigan Avenue, and that was for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. Mm-hmm. Paul, at the time, was the head of the Mounted Patrol in Chicago Mounted Police, and was instrumental in helping design and create that for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And that, to me, is, you know, when you stop and you think about it, not only was he such a great family guy and such a great leader of his troops, as you point out, the men and women under his command, but he was he was great with the horses. He was great with those. That's a very complicated process to be able to train those horses and to maintain those horses to be as effective and efficient as they are, because those are police horses. Those are military horses. That's a very specific thing, and it takes a lot of care. And it's, you know, to lose, there are a lot of great men and women in the Chicago Police Department, a lot of great men and women who serve the city in all capacities. You saw the fire response yesterday. It was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
I mean, Paul cared for the horses just like he cared for the men and women, but he was adamant about getting it done right.
Right.
I mean, when this program came along, he offered us saddles, and he worked with the artist to help design them. And I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was the one who said that the horses should be named after our officers. And he worked with the officers to make sure that they remembered that when we have a memorial for an officer like Ben Perez we had over the summer, we bring out the if we can bring out the horse named after Officer Ben Perez.
Right. The horses, the actual horses in the unit,
yes,
are named after fallen officers. The actual live horses are. Which is an amazing thing. I know he did a story a couple of years ago for television, mm-hmm. and they went through, and he knew the thing about Commander Bauer was that he understood the history of this department and the history of every September when you do the candlelight vigil and the city turns blue, the skyline turns blue, and they do this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ceremony at just east of Soldier Field at the actual physical site of the memorial. It is, it's, you know, the stories of those fallen are told, and he knows them. You know, he knew them, and this is a lot. Let's talk a little bit, Alderman, if we could, for just a second, about the response that the city has to have here, and I don't mean the city, the government, because the government is going to do what it's going to do, but how people, the citizens of the city, should be responding.
I mean, I think we saw the beginning of it last night. People lining the streets, not only our first responders, but people lining the streets, showing respect as the procession, as they brought Commander Bauer to the medical examiner's office. And I think we'll see it in the coming days. I could only hope that, like other times in recent history when we've lost an officer or a firefighter, that the family feels that the entire city is lifting them up on their shoulders. I think we're going to see an incredible response over the next few days. And I only hope that this becomes a response that we see moving forward across the board, in that the men and women of the Chicago Police Department are there to serve and protect us. And we lost a protector yesterday.
I think that's I think it hit home to so many people in this city, because you saw someone like Bauer, who, you know, he represented the epitome of law and order, public servant, protecting the citizens, the officer you looked to help you in a situation that he was that guy. And even it spoke to who he was, that here he is, he's just jumping in to help his fellow officers in a situation that many other commanders, you know, it might not be what you did, right? And this is the guy that's who he was, Frank. That's how you guys knew him.
I mean, he was working on, they did an exercise at the Fire Academy yesterday, and a lot of the commanders were invited. And it's basically a tabletop exercise where you're looking at some terrible things that could happen in the city, and we try to plan for them. I was a commander of special events, and the way the city plans for things and takes events and make sure they're safe, and it's paramount of what they do and the training that goes along with it. And Paul was involved in that. And unfortunately, I mean, they talked about the Thompson Center being attacked at one point, but Paul was involved in that, and he was adamant about that. And he was heading to another meeting with some aldermen concerning another community event, because he was so passionate about taking care of his 18th district. The 18th district is such a critical part of this city. I mean, it's Mag Mile, and it's the businesses and the shops, and it's where we show ourselves to the world. And you can't ever put someone in command of that place that can't handle it. And Paul excelled at it.
And let's just talk about that for a second, too. Because in 18, where you do have you have, as you mentioned, Michigan Avenue. You've got all the high rises along the lakefront. You've got very concerned and very committed citizens in that area who are very concerned about safety. And you know, that's the if you see something, say something crowd, essentially, in Chicago. But you also have in the 18th district, and you have throughout the history of that district, it used to be a very large swath of really, really, really tough streets in Cabrini Green. And now because the housing project has come down, but there are still some very, very, very tough pockets in the 18th district that create, you know, there's still mayhem there. And so to be able to police a circumstance where you have to represent all these business people on Michigan Avenue and all these well-to-do people in high rises who are constantly complaining about something, and then you've got, you know, real, you know, urban dire situations right there as well. It's the most incredibly dynamic job a commander can have, I think, in this city, at least at the district level, district command level.
And he did it without...
He was a young guy who got that job.
And the smile never left his face, and you could ask him about any different thing or any question that came along, any problem that came along, Paul would be able to solve it, and he wouldn't let it get to him. But I mean, the positiveness of Paul, and he was more proud of his wife and the relationship they had, and his beautiful daughter. I mean, Paul was just the epitome of a policeman's policeman, and the father that everyone would like to be. I mean, he will be so sorely missed.
And thankfully, a man of great faith, too. And I know the family is a family of great faith, right, Bridget?
He is, yeah. I actually was able to see Paul on Sunday at church when his daughter is usually the one to do the readings at the police mass, and she was not able to be there, so Paul got up and was able to do the readings, and that was our last time to see Paul. But jokingly, everyone, when he stood up to do the readings, was chanting that we wanted his daughter. and his comment was, well, you get me. So, while he is a man of great faith, I'm glad that he was able to
have that moment, and that moment of levity for that police mass is it's one of those very special Chicago moments that
absolutely
at Mercy Home that happens every couple of weeks, and it's when we stop and we think about this moment, and there are highlight moments or low light moments, if you want to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. There are moments that get seared into our memories as Chicagoans, and this is one of them. And this one is I'll learn particularly hard, I think, for I think for a lot of us, because it comes at a time when, you know, there's been so much talk about what are we going to do and about the crime on the streets. And then there's been an increase in crime sort of spreading its way throughout the city with carjackings and other, and you know, other, this isn't just, you know, gang on gang violence anymore. We're running into other sorts of issues. And it's like whack-a-mole always for the Chicago Police Department trying to figure out, you know, which hole they're going to cover. And and now to have something like this at this moment, I hope that there's a moment of where the political side of this, where the guys in the city council, the men and women, and the mayor and all the rest of people, the city fathers, if you will, take this moment and say, okay, now what can we learn about this, and what can we do in Paul's name?
Right. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a political conversation, but we have a broken judicial system. And this guy that murdered Commander Bauer should have never been on the street.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is a guy that can't be rehabilitated. He's a four-time convicted felon, a violent criminal who should have remained incarcerated.
Right. He had gotten a 16-year bid. About a decade ago, a decade and a half ago, but he did, obviously, in Illinois, he did not spend 16 years.
No.
And his rap sheet is numbers of pages. And they knew who they were looking for. You know, when the tech guys first spotted him, we heard a little bit of the run of events from yesterday, and they spotted him on Laurel Record Drive. There'd been a shooting there over the weekend, and they wanted to talk to him, and then he just ran away from them. Ran up to the street level at Wacker Drive, and it was just an incredibly and then here is Commander Bauer, hears this on his radio, and he runs toward this guy, mm-hmm. not thinking for a second about his own safety, but thinking for the safety of everybody around him. And we need to and that's a part of, I know what the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation does is memorializes these heroes, but you know, this is a moment right now where we can stop and focus on that and talk about the sacrifices that these men and women have made, because there's a woman's name on our wall, but also the what the families and what the city is mourning here today.
And Paul did not want to forget that. I mean, last time, early in June, we have a parole hearing, and we look at cop killers that might be getting out on parole. Mm-hmm. And what the Memorial Foundation is brings together some of the old partners and some of the people that were involved in the shootings. Paul testified at the hearings for the killers of Rossetti and Severin that were gunned down at Cabrini Green back in the 70s when you were little.
That was a sniper killer.
Right.
That wasn't a guy on the street level. That was a guy who was up 15 stories, I think, 12 to 15 stories above this baseball field, which is right now a Target, literally a Target store, mm-hmm. on Division Street. And he just aimed at these guys and then kept all of the first responders at bay by firing.
They couldn't get to
his weapon.
Right.
They couldn't, and these two police officers bled to death on that baseball field like a war zone because this guy sat up in his perch and would not let anybody get near them. He was firing at everything. I mean, this moment and that moment, I think, are tied. Let me just stop for just 1 second. There's other tragedy of the day as well. I'm very sorry to report.
It's down
in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where there's been a school shooting, and Judy has an update.
Yes, we are now being told, ABC News confirming that 15 people are dead. We had been talking about multiple fatalities, but perhaps just two. Now we are hearing 15 people dead in that shooting at that high school, Douglas High School in southeast Florida in the town of Parkland. We will have much more coming up at the top of the hour.
All
right. Well. It's too much.
Violetta? Half hour brought to you by the Hip and Knee Center, where to help you feel new again.
Yes.
All right. Top 5 of 5 is going to get postponed again today because we have with us in the studio from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation, Frank Gross and Bridget Shuda. And Frank is a longtime, now retired Chicago Police Department. He's an officer, rose to the rank of commander. And knew Paul Bauer very, very well. And also Alderman Matt O'Shea is here. And we'll talk a little bit about what Matt's, you know, every year we do, you do this pancake breakfast for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation at St. John Fisher, the school there in Beverly. Or is that Mount Greenwood, actually?
West Beverly.
West Beverly. Okay. I don't want, because I know that people can sometimes get a little sensitive about
that.
You'll
part
get
of
corrected.
The Fighting 19th Ward.
Yeah, it is all part of the Fighting 19th. That is correct. And people who want to come out, that's at, if people want to come out on Sunday morning, that that breakfast is still going on and I think is going to be pretty pretty well attended.
Yeah.
So, and you're raising money at the door for the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And we're going to talk a little bit about, for Chicagoans and people who, you know, love this city, whether you live in the city or you don't, but you love the city and you're touched by the horror of this event yesterday and you want to do something about it, there's a couple of different ways to do that. And we're going to get to that in just a moment. But if people want to go to St. John Fisher, it's at...
This Sunday, February 18th, our fourth annual Get Behind the Vest Pancake Breakfast, St. John Fisher, is located at 10200 South Washington Avenue.
And if you can't make it, you can donate another way?
Yes, Alderman? You can go to the Police Memorial Foundation, make a donation there.
Good.
Now, specifically, we should mention here, this is important, because there are a lot of people who set up GoFundMe pages that have nothing to do with tragedies like this. Specifically, the Policeman's Credit Union has set up, Chicago Patrolman's Credit Union has set up a fund specifically for this family. Even if there were a GoFundMe takes a cut off the top. This money, 100% of the money goes directly to this family.
Right. The idea is that everyone on social media wants to, okay, what can we do? And they start these pages, and 8% goes to the GoFundMe people. So we worked with the 18th District, and we worked with the credit union, which is a huge supporter of the foundation. And we want to, for those people, we can't really, the foundation accepts money, and we give money to all the Chicago police families. We can't give money directly to one individual family. I mean, we actually take care of many, and we will be able to give a donation to the family tomorrow for the death benefit, sadly, for the Bauer family. But for those people that want to give directly something to the family, We're working with the credit union, and there's the Paul Bauer Memorial Fund, and every dollar you send to the credit union goes directly to the family. There's no fees or anything like that. They can drop a check off at any credit union, Chicago Patrolman's Federal Credit Union. There's one on the south side. Their headquarters is at 1407 West Washington. So if they wanted to drop a check to 1407 West Washington and address it to the Chicago Patrolman's Federal Credit Union, Paul Bauer Memorial Fund, that will go directly to the family.
And police are really, I mean, he's so well-loved, so well-respected. I've heard that police are coming together to help his family personally through this as well, because I can only imagine what kind of support and needs they might have in this moment.
That's one thing about the police family. I mean, until you walk in our shoes, you have no idea what they see, what these officers see on a daily basis. And they speak the same language. They know what each other's gone through, and they know the pain when we lose one of our own. And all we want to do is try to support them. So,
Violetta wants to break in here, actually, with some traffic news related to all of this.
Yes, Ro, looks like Chicago police are moving Commander Bauer's body. IDOT is now closing the inbound Eisenhower at Western and outbound Ryan at Polk. So you're going to see some delays increasing there. Inbound Eisenhower is closed at Western and outbound Ryan at Polk.
All right. We'll keep you abreast of that situation as it unfolds here. There, you saw the procession. You know, to me, as tragic as this story is, and it doesn't get much more tragic than this in Chicago.
No.
The response has been amazing. The response by, you saw the Chicago police response and Chicago fire response yesterday. From the moment this incident started, I mean, you see the heroic work of the Chicago firefighter paramedics who were trying to save Commander Bauer's life. You saw the response. We were heading down to McCormick Place for the show yesterday,
right,
and you saw all the command vehicles heading north toward Northwestern, and thousands of individuals got involved in this yesterday. Whether they were going to Northwestern to be there for their fallen colleague, or they were going there because it's a family member, or they were helping with the procession to get the commander's body to the medical examiner's office yesterday. And now you're going to see again this response. There are the picture of the firefighters erecting the arch underneath with the flag, the American flag hanging from it, and underneath which the Chicago Fire Department ambulance was driven with his body in it. It's just one of those, again, searing
moving
images.
Moments.
That we will all have, and as awful as this is, I think we can be very, very proud of the work of the Chicago Police and the Chicago Fire in this in this instance.
Let me ask Alderman O'Shea something, because I think a lot of people are struck by it now that we know the suspect's been identified. His lengthy rap sheet has been also identified. He basically is a career criminal who has been in and out of the court system, in and out of the prison system since 1994. Charges were dropped. He was on probation. There are violent crimes. There's drugs. There's a whole slew of charges. The biggest time he served was, what, like 9 years or something for armed robbery in 1998. And I think a lot of people say, okay, do the courts look at this kind of a situation where an officer is shot multiple times, several times in the head, never drew his weapon, by this career criminal, and wonder what kind of could have gone wrong in their system here? Maybe there's something fell through the cracks here. Is that something? Is that the way they'll look at this, or what? How do you look at it? Let me start out there, and then you turn your attention to the court.
I mean, this. There's so much of this that is so frustrating and upsetting. Starting off with the fact that this guy was even out on the street. But to answer your question, I don't know that this wakes anybody up. You know, over the weekend we saw a circuit court judge gave a $10,000 personal recognizance bond and home monitoring for a guy who was walking the street with an AR-15 with 22 rounds in it. Our judicial partners, the judicial partners with the Chicago Police Department, have to take a look at themselves, and we need to really start working together about not only prosecuting violent offenders, but sentencing them properly. If you're given a 16-year sentence for an armed robbery, you should serve 16 years. But time and time again, we see this here in Chicago, where violent offenders get out early and they go back to committing violent crime. And one thing we never hear about anymore, well, we're hearing it now, sadly, with Commander Bauer, but we never hear about the victim anymore. And we need to start talking about the victims. These violent criminals continue to run the streets armed and dangerous. This guy, Ligeti, he shouldn't have been out.
Yeah.
And Paul just talked about that. I mean, he's been interviewed recently, and he talked about the repeat offenders getting back on the street. I mean, he brought that to everyone's attention.
You know, the three strikes you're out law that was in California, was struck down, was one of those, you know, was a response to moments like this in California. And what the problem with three strikes you're out was that you could have there's a difference in people who are using violent tactics and people who are using nonviolent tactics in a crime. And that was where the application of that law, you know, they would say that if somebody's a shoplifter three times, was ending up getting, you know, if you shoplift something over $1,000 or whatever, then they would end up for life in prison. And the people were all upset about it. And I mean, and I think reasonably that's an argument to make. A guy like this, whose rap sheet does include armed robbery, you know, with a gun, who has had a subsequent gun violation and numbers of drug contact with police concerning intent to distribute drugs, and also a conviction of that. I mean, that's. The judges need to use common sense. And I get that they argue that there's just not enough room in the system and that you know, we get the jails are overcrowded, which they're not, which county jail is not currently overcrowded. And they let people out on, there's, you know, the I-bond system is without question. That's where the personal recognizance bond or, you know, the low-level bond. You know, they've got cases. I was talking to a police officer earlier today about exactly this, a guy who, you know, made a stop, took a bad guy off the street, but it turned out the kid was 17 and was able to get I-bonded out and just never heard from again. You know, they go to court, the police go to court that, you know, that next week to try to get him held. And this is a kid that had been in trouble a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now until the next time he gets picked up. You know, I mean, the system has been taken advantage of. And, you know, we wonder about all the different factors that go into what have made our streets so dangerous in certain parts of the city. And I think throughout the city now, if you look at it, I mean, you think about almost a million people are in the loop, in and out of the loop on any given business day. And you had seven shots fired at one of the busiest corners in America yesterday. And it's, you know, it's time for us to for exactly the purposes that, or the reasons you just mentioned, Ullman. This is time to stop and say, well, we can't let this happen. And I think we have an election coming up, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of judges' names on the ballot. Nobody knows anything about any of these people. You know who knows about them? The people who are running for judge, and a couple of, and you know, maybe the Bar Association is, you know, checking the names. Mm-hmm. Find a way to and
do your homework.
Do your homework on this. Yes. You can go online, and there's the Chicago Bar Association that will rate these judges who are running. Some of them running for retention. Think, oh well, they're already a judge. It must be good. Think again. There are a lot of judges who shouldn't have been there.
Right.
There are judges, you know, you don't have to have a law degree to be a judge in Cook County, which is just an absolutely amazing and astounding fact. And there are some people who make the bench. They get sidelined when they get there, but there are some people who get elected onto the bench who do not have a law degree. I mean, it is a crazy, crazy, crazy system. And we need to be, you know, far more cognizant of that than we have been. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've said this in my career, but you know, there's a moment where you stop, and we also have this other tragedy that's happening in Florida too. I'm sorry to not be able to pay the proper attention on this show at this moment for this, because you know you've got over a dozen kids, high school kids, lost in a school shooting in Florida today. And, you know, you stop and you think about moments like this and you think, what can we do about it? And when does the roller coaster stop? When do you stop it and stop and go, we've got to take account of this and we've got to make proactive changes in how we address these issues? So, all right, well, Frank, thank you so much for being here. Bridget, thank you so much for being here from the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation. And Alderman, you know, we'll see you Sunday at the Pancake Breakfast. On behalf of the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation at St. John Fisher School, which is 102nd and Washtenaw Avenue, or 10200 South Washtenaw, because there's 102nd and then 102nd Place down there. It seems that you don't ever, when you get into Beverly, it's designed to...
You can get lost somehow.
It's like a casino. It's designed to never let you out, is the way that it goes down there. This is a really, really great event, and I think this year more than ever, it requires attention and support, because there's a lot of people hurting in this town, and there's a lot of Chicago police hurting in this town. There are a lot of city workers, firefighters, and people who think, but for the grace of God, go they. And then the citizens of Chicago, like myself, who stop and think about the tragedy of this, and this is, not only should we pray for the soul of Paul Bauer, but also for his family, for his wife Erin, for his daughter Grace, but also for the city as well, and the men and women of the Chicago Police Department. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?